Jeff's guests appear on the Memphis Express phone line. Get on board the Express at AAF.com or call 901-881-3344 for tickets. This is the Jeff Calkins Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Harrington deal.
Now, it's Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian on the Grizzlies and Beyond. Presented by Fleming's Prime Steakhouse and Wine Bar on 92.9's Jeff Calkins Show.
Chris Harrington joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That is Stranger in My Own Hometown by Elvis Presley, who would have turned, I believe, 84 today. Is that right? Today's Elvis's birthday. That's a song from he recorded in Memphis at his American studio sessions in the late 60s. I think appropriate in his hometown, where we care about his death more than his life for the most part, which is mostly, I think, an accident of seasons. Like, you know, it's the death was in the summer and people can come to town, and it's a little bit harder in January. So the commemoration of the death has been become a bigger thing than the celebration of the birth. Anyway, salute to Elvis.
Also, David Bowie's birthday today.
This is true, but you know,
and Freddie Mercury's birthday and Michael Jackson's. No, That's not true. I'm wrong. It's Elvis's and
David Bowie's. And my Uncle Don.
And your Uncle Don, right? That's exactly right. I knew it was either Freddie Mercury or your Uncle Don.
Or Don, right?
Freddie Mercury was in September. Okay, so many things to get to. Let me start with just a little more on the Chandler Parsons thing, just to wrap that up. In retrospect, you had a really interesting piece on this yesterday at the Daily Memphian, and I urge people to read it. It's useful to be reminded this doesn't absolve them from what they did. It was clearly a mistake to sign Chandler Parsons in the first place. It was a really interesting scenario that summer, because once you signed Mike Conley, you were up against the cap. So you had this money to spend. We were just talking off the air. It's like being sent into an overpriced store like, say, Sharper Image, and say, here's $50 gift card. You have to spend it in the next hour.
It expires tomorrow.
And so you get this vibrating pillow. Right. Yes, exactly. And it doesn't absolve them, but it was a curious circumstance.
In the summer of 2016, there was more money to be spent than good players to spend it on. And it was a great summer for the Golden State Warriors, who signed Kevin Durant.
Right.
It has mostly been a summer of regret for most other teams. Like, look elsewhere on the Grizzlies roster, where Joakim Noah's there. He's another, you know, summer of 2016. We got this money. What are we going to do with it? And then the Knicks do that. And so there were mostly bad choices to make, and the Grizzlies ended up making the worst of the choices.
Right.
There's
no reason to think is the problem that you know, very clearly they weren't getting Evan Fournier. They weren't getting Nicholas Batum.
Well, those players ended up staying with their own teams.
Right. And
those haven't been great deals either.
Right.
Better than Parsons, but they have not been great deals.
Right. There's Eric Gordon. Maybe they could have gotten him, but like, Memphis isn't, who knows, like, whether...
Yeah, I think they probably could have gotten Eric Gordon, but they probably would have ended up paying more than he actually signed for to outbid in Houston.
Right,
so you can't just take that contract and move it over.
I don't think there's any reason to think they could have gotten Harrison Barnes. Harrison Barnes was obviously moved after
We'll never Warriors. Know, but my guess is not.
Most people pick Dallas over Memphis, right? Yeah. So I don't think he necessarily could have gotten Harrison Barnes. Again, none of this absolves them from what they did, because it was clearly the wrong decision. In terms of the most recent... the way this played out, there's a clear perception that JB wanted to play, wanted Chandler available to play.
Can I make a mini rant on this, where you're headed? Yeah. And I'll try to make this brief.
Go ahead.
I've written 2,000 words.
Right.
Even recently on Chandler Parsons, or another column before that, you've written a column, whatever. We've gone through all the Chandler Parsons angles.
Yep.
This is not, this story, this Chandler Parsons story is, I believe, not really about Chandler Parsons.
Right.
This may sound weird to some people, but the fundamental Chandler Parsons situation is unchanged from what it was a month ago. The fundamental Chandler Parsons situation is his knees are shot, he's never going to be a meaningful NBA player again, his contract is a sunk cost, and the Grizzlies were in a waiting pattern to get to the last year of that contract to figure out how to dispose of it. That was the truth a month ago. That is the truth today. It's just that Parsons has made it a thing.
Right.
But the fundamentals have not changed. The meaning of the Chandler Parsons story, I think, is ultimately about J.B. Bickerstaff, and it's about the relationship between the front office and the coaching staff. That the Grizzlies, didn't really want Parsons to be on the floor until he had proven something to them, I think totally rational. That the Grizzlies were skeptical that he could help them, totally rational. That the Grizzlies are sick of dealing with him, totally rational. But when they made the decision not to make him available to be activated, that was a J.B. Bickerstaff decision, not a Chandler Parsons decision. That was a, we are not going to let our coach make the decision about whether to play this guy and how much and in what spot. And to me, I don't know whether they thought about it in this way, but the reality was they were making a decision that was more about their relationship with their coach than their relationship with Chandler Parsons.
Well, and that's a, that that's a, like, here we are again.
Right.
What do you do with that? I mean, there's all kinds of questions about JB anyway now.
Right.
You've said he had a bad month before any quote-unquote schism.
You could argue the front office had a bad, like, few years, right?
Yeah, right,
so, I mean, until this summer, like, they got Jared Jackson.
What do you do with that?
I don't know.
And now there's this kind of – here's the other thing. Is that now there's, like, this – every time they lose a game, like last night, they're like, what, Chandler Parsons couldn't have helped? Like, I mean, I know he couldn't have helped. You know he couldn't have helped.
Right.
But there's this sort of built-in excuse. You wonder if even JB, who clearly wanted to play him,
right,
is thinking, Chandler Parsons could have helped. Like,
right.
And there's certainly fans out there thinking Chandler Parsons could have helped. I mean, in the end, we didn't know that it was going to go this way because we didn't know that, A, they were going to lose all these games, and, B, that Chandler was going to blow it up. Like, that Chandler made a deal of it.
Well, there's some things, like, obviously we can't know at this point. Like, if they had just said, fine, you are available, making you active doesn't mean you're going to play.
Right.
That puts it in the coach's hands. If they just said, fine, we will make you available to the coaching staff, would that have been less disruptive or more disruptive than what has actually happened, right? I think probably less, ultimately.
We know that now.
We think we know that now.
Right.
The other thing we don't know is, would this have gone differently if Parsons hadn't gone public, right?
Right.
If he had just been unhappy internally, not even not gone public, but not like screamed at Chris Wallace in practices, not gone public with his agent, with himself, not done the social media subtweeting, and other, if all that stuff hadn't happened to exacerbate the ill will, would they have eventually, if he just stayed in practice and kept practicing, at some point would they have said, okay? And I wrote, not this most recent thing, but the one before, at some point, like, guys are going to get hurt. So if you just keep practicing and, like, make, you know, quote unquote, stay ready, I think the opportunity would have come around for you at some point, even if it wasn't right now. The other thing, and I didn't write this because I'm going to say it now because Chris Vernon said it on his show yesterday, but I heard it before then. I didn't write this because of the manner in which I heard it, but Chris said it yesterday. The front office, the organization believes Chandler Parsons leaked that fight story to Shams Charania. I had heard on my own that is widely believed within the offices over there. And Chris went further yesterday on a show. He said he knows for a fact at least three players believe that Parsons did that. Now, I don't know if Parsons did that, and Chris doesn't know if Parsons did, but that is the belief over there. So that's more like gasoline on the fire in terms of just people over there being sick of Chandler Parsons.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, and that's why in the end I ripped him, because I just think this doesn't absolve the Grizzlies at all, but he comes across as this unbelievably ungrateful, whining, subtweeting. It's just the way that he handled himself through all of this. I don't really blame them,
right?
You know, but it doesn't. It hasn't played out well for them,
though. But again, back to the beginning of my rant, I think the real end game with Chandler Parsons has really not changed. Become more of a public messy thing, but the actual game theory of it is the same as it was a month or two ago, I think. But the real meaning is like this weirdness and the seeming tension between your front office and your coaching staff, which you thought you'd gotten rid of, right?
The whole point of J.B. Bickerstaff was he was the ultimate team guy.
Right. And maybe he is. Like, you know, I don't want to but I just think that this thing has revealed some lack of trust between those two sides. It is not – maybe it created it, but it certainly has revealed it, right?
By the way, if players believe, because you had social media liking of subtweets by
Mark, I don't know what to make of that.
By Mark and Mike, we believe that JB wanted Chandler to be activated. Do we have any sense as to whether the other players, where they fall on the Chandler thing?
I don't know. I don't feel comfortable saying it either way. I will say that when you see like the likes on social media, to me that is not. That may mean one thing, it may mean another. It may just be teammate etiquette. So I don't know if that is a true, like, I don't think you can look to a player's soul and know what they really think because they liked a social media thing, right?
Right.
Yeah. Just nuts. Okay. Where does that get you, though, with JB? Because if you don't trust your coach, if you think your coach is going to play this guy who can't play, which he did at the beginning of the year, I mean, you know,
I think if there were no history here with the Grizzlies and coaches,
they would fire
JB. If this was Mark Averone.
Right.
If this was, you go back to Mark Averone, who there were no real history. I mean, they had gotten rid of some coaches, but it wasn't the same kind of thing, right? It was just, this is our coach, we like him, and then we get disappointed in him, and so you make a change. I think JB Bickerstaff would be on thin ice right now if it was that, but it's not that. It is, this organization has a history with changing their coaches every 18 months, and they have to calculate. I'm not saying that they want to fire JB Bickerstaff. I'm not saying
right.
that at all.
Right.
But even if they did, they would have to calculate what is more damaging to us, right? Letting the coach go or keeping the coach, right?
Well, and it's also what is more damaging to us as an organization? What is us also damaging to us personally? So, for example,
yes.
maybe the best thing for the organization, the least damaging thing for the organization, broadly speaking, is to just clean everybody out of there,
Someone asked me last night, I got called by somebody, and they asked me, if the Grizzlies wanted to change their head coach, what would be the best PR way to do it?
It's to fire everybody.
And that's what I said. I said the best PR way to do it is you sit at a podium and say, this is my new president of basketball operations,
right.
and he's going to assemble his staff
exactly.
in the front office and in the coach's room, right?
And so you have, therefore, a general manager and personnel people who are making decisions that may not be, self-preservation decision. If I'm Chris Wallace, I'm thinking, I can't fire JB Bickerstaff because then I'm going to be fired. I have no credibility to go out there and even if I wanted to fire him, stipulating that you wanted to fire him.
Well, the other question is, even if you wanted to fire him, can you fire him? Or is that a Robert Parra decision?
Right. But can you? Honestly, it looks like the trade's the same thing, like the Holiday trade. Is that is giving up two second-round picks in the best long-term interest, or is the best short-term interest of a management that wants to stay employed?
Oh, they clearly agreed with this, and I still in retrospect agree with it, and I'm not ready. And
right.
Even though I joked on Twitter, I'm not moved
yet.
Today. The idea of trying to be as good as you can be within reason this season, I think was the right goal.
Right.
Now the Holiday thing, I did in small ways object to because I think it reached the point that that I wouldn't be giving up. Basically spending money today that I can wait and spend a year
right.
or two from now.
Okay. That's enough Chandler for now. Let's move on to, I want to get to the larger questions about where from here a little bit. But just in terms of the team itself, you tweeted out last night, Don Wade wrote the road recap that we do over at Daily Memphian. You can read that at dailymemphian.com. But you said the biggest problem with the team, and it pretty clearly is the shocking drop-off from the best Marc Gasol we've ever seen to maybe the worst we've ever seen.
I think for all the drama about the trades and the non-trades and Chandler Parsons and who's hitting each other in the locker room and is Jaren Jackson playing the fourth quarters and Shelvin Mack versus Javon Carter, all these things are totally meaningful, right? For all of that, it all pales in terms of what's happening this season game by game, it all pales to Gasol. To me, it's all about Gasol. Gasol played at an all NBA level through the end of November, and he has been bad, probably as bad as he's ever been since. And I know, because I see it every time I say anything about Gasol on my Twitter feed, people just refuse to think there could ever be a physical thing involved in anything bad Marc Gasol ever does. If he has a bad game, he's just not trying. He just
right.
doesn't care. I'm sorry, but if you look at his game logs, there is a clear point of demarcation, and it matches up exactly to the game where he sprained his ankle badly and then played 46 minutes the next night. He went from being elite to being average or below average in an instant. He had back-to-back games of 15-plus points for the first time since the ankle injury, and it seemed like, okay, maybe he's coming out of this a little bit. And then he dipped back down, and then you had the reports of the hamstring stuff. And I just think, I don't know how they lost the thread on. It seemed like it was becoming more common for players to rest, especially older players, especially on back to backs. And they actually did that a couple years ago, right, with Gasol, and he didn't like it, but they did it. And they just stopped. Like, we're not doing that anymore. And they just play them every night, no matter what. And I think we will look back, and in terms of on the floor within the season, the biggest mistake they made this season was they didn't set him down for a week or two when he sprained that ankle. Not only to recuperate, but to rest.
Right.
I think that we will look back, and that will have been an enormous mistake that they made.
They announced they weren't going to practice today, but now they are practicing today.
Right. I don't know what that's about, but I think when you're coming back to town for the first time since all this news has erupted, if you're not going to practice when you normally would, it looks like you're dodging something, right?
Right.
And so I don't really know other than that.
Okay. And then the other thing I did want to get to, and this is be a season-long thing to talk about, is this sort of difficult place where they find themselves because
right.
of the draft pick and everything else. And everyone's blow it up.
And because the point of the season is that we're one day short of a month from the trade deadline. And so
right.
that's a decision point for teams, right?
So right now, to me, the goal has never been, yes, make the playoffs great, wonderful. The goal has been good enough to be competitive, we said this at the beginning of the year, and to convey the pick that is top
right.
eight protected to Boston. And in order to do that, you have to finish at least, or you either, well, we finish ninth from the bottom, obviously, not in the top eight, or the lottery can jiggle that, or
yes.
you could get luckier in the lottery. But let's just say the goal is to finish ninth from the bottom. If you finish ninth from the bottom, you have a chance to jump into the top four. You do have a chance to be bumped down, but in which case you'll convey the pick to Boston, right?
This brings up the let's make a deal question. If you stipulate we're not a playoff team, right? You're in the lottery. 14 teams in the lottery. Lottery's for four picks. So the 14 teams in the lottery. The lottery's for four picks. Your pick is protected 1 through 8. These are the circumstances,
right?
If you don't move the pick this summer, it's protected 1 through 6 in the summer of 2020, unprotected in 2021. So the other variable here are the players involved in the draft, and that's what I can't really speak to that well. But your question for the Grizzlies is then, the overarching question is, do you want to keep the pick? And in which case you kick the obligation down the road and you take on the added risk of still owning a pick with a lower protection? Or would you rather give the pick to Boston and then take that worry off your plate and move forward without it? That's the overarching question, right? The complicating factor is that is not a simple question. That is a question that changes depending on what pick you're talking about, right? And so my assumption is, and I don't know, I haven't talked to them about this, but my assumption would be if it's the number one pick in the draft, you'd say, yeah, give us that pick. We'll kick it down the road. We'll take the risk in order to get the number one pick. If it's the eighth pick, my guess is they would say, you know what? It sucked to not have a draft pick after missing the playoffs, but we would rather give Boston that pick and then get that off our books and we'll move forward unencumbered. So if that's true, one, you'd rather keep it, eight, you'd rather give it up. At what point between 1 and 8 is the inflection point? And I don't know what that is. Is it 2? Is it 3? Is it 4? Is it 5? Is it 6? Depends on how you feel about this draft, right?
Yeah. Here's the additional complication, though, is that right now you've got Phoenix, Cleveland, New York, Chicago, and Atlanta.
You're not going to get higher than like 6, even if you
that's
take.
That's 6, right?
Right.
So you can get lucky if you're 6. But
6
you,
or 7,
you're
right.
going to be in there at 6 or 7.
Right.
I don't know. Let's say, to me, it's obvious. I still want to convey the pick to Boston because at least from what I know about the draft, this ain't a great draft,
but next year ain't a great draft. But you would not.
No, I would if they get top one, I'd keep it.
Right.
Yeah, top three, I'd keep it. Yes.
This is my question: is it 3? Is it 4? Is it like?
Yes,
you know, I don't
your
know.
Your odds are not. If you're going to finish 6, 7, or 8, your odds are not finishing the top 3. So I'm going to try to go ahead and finish 9 and jump into the top 4. I'm going to 9 and jump either.
Not,
that way, you either
nine is the sweet spot in that you can. You will lose the pick unless you jump into
unless
the top four.
Unless you get lucky. That's what you want to do.
That eliminates the possibility of the 6 through 8, right?
Right.
And so, but you get to this question of, like, what do you value more? Do you value more the odds of getting to the top four, or do you value more eliminating the odds of getting, you know, in that other range? But nine's the sweet spot because you got, like, a 20% chance to get into the top four, and if you don't,
then
you'll move
the pick.
You don't have the situation where you get the eighth pick in a mediocre draft and you still owe this pick to Boston.
Here's the problem, though. I don't know.
You can't control.
I don't know that they can finish in the top. I think right now, so they have to finish.
Nine is where they are right now, tied for 9.
I know. They're tied for 9 right now with Dallas. Dallas is demonstrably better than them right now, certainly of the last 15 games, right?
It could go either way going forward.
Then you've got to, in order to not drop into, in order to stay at 9, you've got 18 wins. Detroit has 17, Orlando has 17, and Washington has 16. You've got to stay ahead of all three of those teams.
In order to not get
in order to not
you don't want to be 6-7-8.
In order to not be 6-7-8. I don't think you can do that. I think it doesn't matter. So that therefore I would ask this question. If you think
you can't do that if you
you're trying to win every single game you can. I think it's gonna be hard for them to finish out of the top eight.
So you're saying you play it through just like you would if you're in a playoff race all the way to the end.
Or you say, I can't stay ahead of these teams anyway. I'm going to start throwing stuff overboard and try to get like that.
Right.
To me, I don't think they can stay ahead of all these teams.
See, I think even if you throw stuff overboard, you're not going to get in the,
you're not going to get high enough.
Right. And so that's why.
To make a difference, a marginal difference.
The blow it up question cannot be a question about this summer's draft. It has to be a larger question than about this summer's draft because there is a limit. There's always a limit to which you can control the outcome because it's a lottery. But at the point we're at in the season with the record they have, it's even, as you point out, more narrow the degree you can control the outcome.
What's the – and we'll get into this more as the season goes
on. We'll be talking about this for the next several months,
what is
basically.
We know that Garrett Temple and Jermichael Green, whatever. What is the
– there's been a lot of belief when they brought Garrett Temple in and they want to re-sign him and, you know, he's a locker room guy.
Right, they could, right. But what is the market value of Mark or Mike this trade deadline?
Let's start with Mark because I've thought about that more because I just don't think there's any way they're trading Mike Conley now.
Right.
The Marc Gasol thing is complicated because I think the market for Marc Gasol this summer as a trade candidate or as a free agent is much larger than the market is Marc Gasol ahead of this trade deadline for a few different reasons. But one of the most prominent of which is people are waiting until they find out where Anthony Davis is going.
Right.
Like I had someone tweet me and say, what about this trade to the Lakers for Marc Gasol? And I had Dan Wyke on the podcast. I can't remember whether he said this on or off, but I'll say it on the show. At one point, he said to me, what about Marc Gasol to the Lakers next year if they miss on Anthony Davis? I think that's possible, but they got to miss on Anthony Davis first.
Right.
Like, they're not trading for Marc Gasol right now.
Take up their money, right.
And so, A, Marc Gasol is – if a team was going to try to get Marc Gasol, A, they're trying to win, and B, they have a need for a center, right? That is an extremely narrow – there you can count on one hand the teams that fit these criteria – but then take out the ones who are just, they're waiting on Anthony Davis. Like, they're waiting on other stuff. Marc Gasol is not the first domino. The other dominoes have to fall. So I think Marc Gasol's trade value in the next month is very, very low, I would suspect. I think.
Can you imagine? Like, to whom? For what?
Earlier in the season, I thought, you know, maybe Toronto. But Toronto's been so good with that smaller front court. Do they really want Marc Gasol? Like, you know, I can see a trade of Jonas Valanciunas and some other stuff for Marc Gasol. You thought maybe Milwaukee, they're trying to win now. Like, he would be an upgrade, I guess. But, like, they've been good with Brook Lopez at, like, shooting threes. And so the Lakers are obvious, but the Lakers aren't doing that because they're trying to get Anthony Davis, right? And so, you know, early in the season when Washington was trying to be good, like Washington, but, like, not anymore. Miami, if you want to take Hassan Whiteside, they'd probably do it. But do you want to take Hassan Whiteside, right? I don't think there's a good deal to be made for Marc Gasol in the next month.
What if this stipulates, of course, that Mark isn't going to opt in. Like, he could go to the Lakers and not opt in. Like, could you get an agreement from Mark that I'm not going to opt into the last year of the deal and I'll go to the Lakers now?
You mean if he opts out just becomes a free agent?
At the end of the year, he promises the Lakers I'm not going to opt. Yes, exactly.
Oh, you mean them trading for him?
Trading for him now and with the agreement with him that he's not
going to. No, because I don't think, A, you would have to give up something. You don't want to give up anything. You want to keep all your bullets in your chamber or whatever for Anthony Davis. And B, even at. You're still I don't think that's
you don't think Mike Conley's
I think Mike Conley would have more trade value. I think Mike Conley has acquitted himself well enough. He's 31. It's a big contract. There's two more years left after this one. I think Mike Conley's actually a pretty good asset at this point. I don't think the Grizzlies are going to make a quick decision on trading Mike Conley in the next month. If you get into the summer and you think, okay, it's time to rebuild, then maybe you have that conversation. I would be shocked to see Mike Conley in the next month.
What I'm taking away from this is that what's going to happen is this is what I'm what's going to happen is this. They're going to limp and they're going to try to finish as they're trying to be as good as they can be.
Right.
They're going to try to be as good as they
they're
can be. As you point out,
sprint through the finish line.
There's a sprint for the finish line. There's no market out there for Mark. They're not trading Mike. They'll make some decisions on Jermichael one way or another.
Yep.
And they're not going to fire Chris Wallace and they're not going to fire JB Bickerstaff. They're going to do what they can do. And then at the end of this year, it's all up for grabs, starting with Chris Wallace on down
right.
And every player.
And this
and
is another
else.
Reason why the Chandler Parsons thing, for all the drama about it, it's not that important right now because what you do with Chandler Parsons, depends on more important things than Chandler Parsons, including Marc Gasol, right? That's, and it's sort of, it's even a problem with the idea of trading Jermichael Green because, okay, Jermichael Green's value, he's a good player, whatever. His value is an expiring contract, right? Same with Garrett Temple. Well, are you trying to compete or are you trying to rebuild? If you're trying to compete, you're trading that expiring contract for maybe someone with 2 or 3 years on their deal that you think could help you, and the other team is, you know, just trying to get into free agency and they're trying to get rid of money. If you're trying to rebuild, you're trying to take back toxic, you're trying to take back the other team's Chandler Parsons and then get draft picks with it, right? And so the kind of deal you're making with your expiring contracts now for Garrett Temple or Jermichael Green or this summer for Chandler Parsons depends on what you're trying to do.
Next year.
Yeah. Right. And I don't think you can know what you're trying to do right now because, I mean, is Marc Gasol coming back? Like, I don't know.
Oh,
it's a mess.
It is an absolute mess. Chris, thanks very much. We will talk to you tomorrow.